Accession number 27796, Mr. Harry Irons, Real Six. Now, we're talking about you joined Horrigan's crew, Flying Officer Horrigan.
That's great.
Now, what was Horrigan like?
He was about 23 years of age, very tall, had no sense of fear at all. He had no sense at all of fear. He just went in, crash, bang, wallop, you know. And all the crew was Australians, except me. And they put me in the mid-upper. But the turret in the Halifax was entirely different from the Lancaster. He had four 303s in the mid-upper.
Now, how different was the turret? What type of turret was it?
It was electrical operated. It wasn't hydraulic. It was electrical operated, and they had four machine guns in the mid-upper.
And how did it operate? Was it easy to operate?
Oh, quite easy, yeah. It had 360-degree transfers, and raise the guns quite up to about good 90 degrees with the guns, because you had to be careful of the tail plane. No. The reason why it stuck me in the mid-upper, the rear gunner, was an Australian, but he was pretty raw. He said, "I'd like you to go in the mid-upper," he said, "because you can see a little bit more, you know a little bit more, and you can more or less direct it a bit better from there," which you can do, because your area of sight is 100% better than the rear turret.
So what happens next then?
We went to Domburg, D-O-M-B-U-R-G. Can't remember much about it. And the following night, oh, well, that was a daylight actually on Domburg in Germany. It just shows you. I never realised that.
Well, tell us how did the Halifax compare with the Lancaster in your view?
I mean, my view, I think it was a better aircraft. I thought it was a much, much better aircraft, but it was belined. Nobody mentions the Halifax, but the Halifax done more donkey work than any other bomber. It was, they had it more or less right from the beginning of the war to the end. What made the miracle change in it? They changed the engines from liquid cool to air cooled engines, and they changed the tailplane, and it made a vast difference to the aircraft. Made it much more safer and much more faster.
And you actually preferred it to the Lancaster?
Yeah, because it was much easier to get out of. I noticed when I was in the rear turret of the Lancaster, if you wanted to leave in a hurry, you had to open up your back doors, slide along a long passageway, and then reach up, get your chute, put your chute on, pull yourself back in the turret, turn the turret round, and then fall out. Which, when you're going like that, it's a bit difficult. Isn't it?
What you mean when you're going vertically down?
Yeah, or when you're going down any angle, it's pretty hard to. Sometimes I used to climb out. The rear gunner, and it was in the dive, and they couldn't get back, and they couldn't reach their chute. The chute was about 3 yards back from the tail. It was used at a little near the Olsen, right back underneath the Olsen it was. And of course you had your reserves of bullets along there, what they used to call the servo fee of your bullets to the rear turret. Because you can't imagine it, but the aircraft were absolutely basic. Everything, every control, every wire, every rod was on show. Everything was in the aircraft was on show. There was nothing, and the floors were metal. Everything was, you know, just as they couldn't be more primitive inside.
Now, any raids you particularly remember in the Halifax?
Not these two. We went to Cologne the following night. And on the 2nd 11th 44, we went to Düsseldorf, my old hunting ground. And then we went to Bochum. Then we went to Gelsenhagen. A daylight, which we never would have attempted a few months earlier. We never would have attempted to go there. But that's how things changed. Then we've done another daylight on Julis, that's in the Ruhr Valley as well. And then we went back to Essen. And then we went to Duisburg. All these towns, there's only a few months previous, when we were losing hundreds of planes being shot down there, you know, by fighters on flak. Because the British and the Americans were going into France now. And consequently, the Germans were leaving the airfields for our fighters to fly from. But what happened though, all the flak guns, they'd moved back into Germany, so therefore there was more flak than ever, if you can understand it. And I went to...
So less aircraft, more flak.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. There was less aircraft, but much more flak. And on the 21st, the 21st of the 12th, we went to Cologne. I can't remember much about that. And then I was posted to another Australian squadron. They must have liked me. Another Australian squadron.
Now, why were you posted?
Because the pilot had finished his tour. No. And the pilot, I think the pilot was on his last couple of trips and he wanted to go to the 466 squadron, but there's no posting because he was on the same airdrome. It was 462 and 466 Australian squadrons at Driffield. And all it meant was just going from one flight office to the other, really. But it was two different squadrons.
So, so you went to, which one did you go to now?
466 squadron.
At the same airfield?
Yeah.
Now, how did you fit in there? Were you still with the same...
Still with Horrigan, yeah, still the same crew, yeah. And we went to Saarbrücken from there, 466. And we went to Magdeburg. And then we went to Gelsenkirchen. All those three, that was in a matter of about a week. That was all in the Royal Valley. I was a lucky man, wasn't I?
And any instance you remember, any close escapes, or was it...
No, we never. We used to see fighters, and well, it was all a close escape. The most horrendous thing was the running. As you run in, the flak, I tell you what... How you flew, I don't understand how you could fly through that amount of shell fire and not get hit. You used to get hit, but you got hit so many times with holes in the aircraft, bits and pieces, you didn't take no notice of it. But on top of that, you had to watch out for the blokes above you, dropping bombs. Some would be dropping about 2,000 incendiaries. Now, you've only got to get hit by one of those and went. And on top of that, the thing that amazes me is the incendiaries we took. They only had to have a slight splinter of a shrapnel, touch them, and the whole lot would go up.
Were you very aware of that risk when you carried it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody knew what was going on. Yeah. And don't forget, all the bombs were all primed. It was all primed to go off. It was all fused, ready to go.
And how are you going with 466 squadron?
Well, we've done three trips on there. Saarbrücken, Magdeburg, Gelsenkirchen. But that was his end of his tour. He finished his tour, Horrigan. And what the Australians were doing then was, after they'd finished the tour, they were sending them home. Wouldn't let them do no more. Well, the Americans only done... I think the Americans done 25 and they were sent home. But the English had to go on.
So Horrigan went back to Australia?
Yeah.
So what happened to you?
I was then posted. Oh, I'd done one more trip before 6-6. As a rear gunner for a P.O. Strange, whose rear gunner was ill. Well, he said he was ill anyway. And I took his place and we went to Wanne-Eiken. That's another town on the Ruhr. What happened after that?
Anything special about that raid?
Not really. I was a rear gunner in it and I was a bit peeved because I'd finished with this crew and now I'd become what they called a spare gunner. and the crew, when they found out you was a second tour merchant, they used to come after you, you know, in the mess, say, would you come and fly with me, you know, but you had to wait till the gunnery officer appointed you, you know, to what crew, and this was P.O. Strange on Halifax, and we went to one of the, well, then...
Did you just do the one flight with Strange?
Yeah, just the one trip, yeah. Then, for no, I don't know why, I was posted to 158 Squadron at Lissick.
Where's that, sorry?
Lissick. It's just outside Hull, Yorkshire. 158 Squadron.
And what were they?
They were the Halifaxes. And they had suffered horrendous losses through the war. They had really suffered tremendous losses. And they were short of rear gunners there.
And when did you go to 158? What month?
That's the 13th of the 2nd, 44. The war was nearly over then, wasn't it?
45.
Well, what have we got there? Yeah, I've got 44 there. It's 45, yeah. 13th of the 2nd, 44. And I flew with her as a spare with a Flight Sergeant K. And this raid was the one that we'll talk about, Dresden.
Now, you flew as a spare gunner with...
Yeah.
What was his name?
It was a rear gunner. K-A-Y. Flight Sergeant, he was looking for a rear gunner. And,
now, what was the date of this Dresden raid?
13th of the 2nd, 44.
Now, 45.
I'm sorry, I've written down as 44, it is 45, yeah.
Now, what do you remember about this raid?
This raid was, the Halifaxes from 4 Group, that's what we was in, was on a raid to bring the fighters away from Dresden. That was our job, to go and bomb a small town called B-O-H-L-E-N. It's a small town off of Dresden. And we was to bomb that and draw the fighters, which we did do. We lost a lot of Halifaxes that night. We drew the fighters away from Dresden and left Dresden more or less open for the Lancs to go in. And as we was bombing Boulogne, this place, we could see the huge fires of Dresden, huge fires burning of Dresden.
Bigger than anything you'd seen before.
Bigger than anything we'd ever seen before, yeah. Enormous. And there wasn't a lot of flak, strangely enough, there wasn't a lot of flak there either. But we was getting a good hiding with the flak and the fighters.
Anything you remember in particular? Was your plane attacked, or were you lucky again?
No, we got hit by flak a few. We come back with a few holes. We see a few going down, and then we were badly shot up, and we landed at Manston.
Now, when you say badly shot up, what do you mean? How much damage?
Probably, holes in the wing and I think in the fuselage. And the pilot said, we'll land at Manston. That was the crash drone in Kent. That was a drone specially built for bombers to crash on when they come back from Germany. They had a huge long runway, so you could put, if you wanted a long runway, there was plenty of room for you to land on.
And that was in Kent?
Yeah, Manston. Just off, just
was it a crash landing or just a dodgy landing?
No, it was a crash landing, especially built for bombers coming back home.
But did you crash land or did you?
No, we landed, but we was in a bit of a state. Yeah, I think we stayed there for 2 or 3 days. They patched us up and then we flew back. I've got another interesting one. After that, this K... His gunner found out he was all right again, and I went and flew with a flying officer, Cooperman.
Cooperman?
Yeah, he was a Canadian Jew, flying officer Cooperman. What happened, he had a rear gunner, an Australian rear gunner, and he went into, he pinched the CO's car, went up to London, got drunk, smashed the car up, and he was on a court martial. And I was his escort round the aerodrome to the court martial come up. I had to follow him everywhere. another, being a warrant officer, and a warrant officer, so I had to walk about with and see that he got into no mischief. And Cooperman came up to me and said, I've got no rear gunner now, would you like to fly with me? I said, fair enough. And I said, I'll be coming to go with Cooperman. On our first raid with Cooperman, we went to Reshon, I don't know, R-E-R-E-I-S-H-O-L-Z. Now this is the most interesting one.
And what date was this?
This was on the 20th of 2nd, 1945.
And what do you remember of the raid on Reshon?
Not a lot. I know the flak was still bad, but the fighters wasn't such a worry because it was being pushed further back, and the British and Americans were bringing more and more fighters into France and Belgium. And of course, now we could fly across France with impunity. There was no flak. Because before that, on that Dutch and Danish coast, the flak was, you couldn't be, mostly light stuff, but there was so much of it. I don't think the Germans could have been firing all them guns. There's so much of it. They used to hit you when you come in, and they'd hit you as you go out. Because by the time we bombed Germany, we'd had enough. So we dropped your foot low 10,000 feet to get our Austrian mask off. Because a lot of the Austrian masks, what we were having, we was having a hell of a lot of difficulty with, because the saliva used to freeze in your pipe and you couldn't breathe from them because it was frozen solid. So we used to drop down to 10,000 feet and get across the coast. We used to start at 10,000 feet just before we hit the coast, put the noses down and go as fast as we could to get over the coast. And we used to be greeted all the way across there with so much gunfire. It was unbelievable.
Now, that's in the past, but now, on the Reshof, how was it different? There was less of it.
There was no flak going in till we hit the town. There's plenty of ACAC in the town, plenty of searchlights, and plenty of fighters.
Do you remember anything about it? Or
not a lot, no. But I should have wrote, see, as I told you before, my best bet of being done was to write a little detail on the logbook after each raid. But if you did that, when it went in the flight office, everybody used to start jeering you because you were what they call bullshit, you know. So we never done it.
So you're happy with Cooperman?
Yeah, a very good pilot.
Did you stick with him?
Yeah, I stuck with him to the end. Actually, this is a very interesting raid, this one, with Cooperman.
The Reshof, yeah.
No, not race. This is on Worms. W-O-R-M-S. I think it was carrying 12,000 pounders that night. And
what date's the rate on Worms?
It was the 21st of the 2nd, 45. We took off at 5 o'clock. As we were going into the target, Cooperman said, now look here, chaps. He said, you won't believe this. He said, this is where I was born. He said, I'm going to bomb my own town. He was a German refugee and got out of Germany just before the war and went to Canada. But he was born in Worms. And he said, I'm bombing my own town now.
So what's next?
Next we went to Essen. I can't imagine. All I'm saying is it was a terrible place. Was in Ruhr Valley. Then we went to a place called Carmen. That was must have been in Ruhr as well. That's 6 hours 17. And the last one of my second tour was Operations Mans. That was on the 27th of the 2nd, 1945.
Anything special about your last raid?
No, not really. I did go up and say to the CEO, I'd like to carry on for a little bit longer. And he said, no, nobody carries on any longer. And I was awarded the DFC on the 6th of November, 1945.
That's quite a bit later.
Later, yeah.
But that was as a result of completing your second tour.
Yeah.
And how did you feel when you'd I mean, you were willing to carry on.
Well, I was then because it was beginning to get very easy. You know, it was getting easy. The fighters weren't such a problem. and the only thing was the flank. The flank never altered. It got worse, actually. But the fighters, they were the menace. If there's fighters about, you always lost a lot of aircraft. Always.
But you don't seem to have encountered the fighters much. Just that once, where you got.
No, that's right. It's an amazing thing. I see plenty of them. There must have been just one. A lot of the fellas used to come back time and time again, shot up, firing, shooting. But it was just one of those, I don't know what, just one of those things that happened to me.
And how did you feel about being awarded? It's quite an important medal.
Well, yeah, because I thought myself, personally speaking, I should have got the DFM on my first tour. But being an NCO, they didn't like giving too many medals. All the officers got them, but the NCOs never. Why, I don't know.
That was something that you were all sort of quite upset about, was it?
Well, really, yeah, because I don't know if you went down a tour and went through all that, and then and the two or three officers got the DOC, and the sergeants didn't get nothing. You know what I mean? Why? Because you all flew together, you all shared exactly the same danger, and you all done your job, you know, as you should have done.
Now, what happened when you finished your tour?
When I finished my tour, they sent me up as a gunnery instructor up to Kinloss.
Now, who were you joining there?
I forget the name. I only got in the logbook now because we didn't do no more flying. I was on the ground there teaching the gunners.
And that was from when?
I should imagine they gave us 6 weeks after we finished our second tour. I think we got about 3 or 4 weeks.
So you finished the second tour in
27
in February, yeah.
And I think we got 4 or 5 weeks leave after finishing the second tour.
Now, the second tour is shorter than the first tour, isn't
always
it?
Always is, yeah.
Is it 15 or...?
No, 20.
20.
But the ones where you go to, but you lose the camera or your eyes up, don't count. So I don't know, probably around about, must have been about 56 or 57, if you count the ones. But it was just as dangerous, but they didn't count because you didn't bring a picture back.
Now, so what do you remember of your time at Kinloss? You had about...
Kinloss.
Kinloss, 2 months before the war ended.
Well, I'll tell you, I got there and I went to see the CO. I was in such a nervous wreck.
Now, tell me about that. What was your state of nerves like?
Terrible. The hands were shaking and I was tearing... When I was talking to him, I didn't realise it. I had something in my hand. I was tearing this piece of paper up and he looked at me and he said... we can't have you as an instructor. Your nerves are shot to pieces. So they sent me down to Blackpool to re-muster as a fabric worker, because I was a tailor, and they re-mustered me as a fabric worker. By then, the war was more or less over.
Now, what is a fabric worker?
It was a matter of just making covers for the lorries, anything with out of fabric we used to make. Being a tailor, I could use a sewing machine, and I said, well, you might as well go as a fabric worker.
Did you lose any rank? Or
no, that's the most amazing thing. I was one of the few that never lost me rank. A lot of them, they dropped right down from WO to sergeants. It was terrible, that was, I think.
So where were you acting as a fabric worker? Where were you?
Was Newmarket, on the race course at Newmarket.
And anything happened? Would you remember VE Day?
I remember VE Day. Yeah, we was up just at Blackpool then. I was on this course, fabric working course.
You were still on the course.
Yeah, and they had a big celebration when there wasn't much there. Obviously, I was short of everything then, you know. But there was plenty. Seemed to be plenty of beer there.
Did you celebrate at all?
Well, I suppose I had a few drinks, but to me it was all finished, and I wasn't in a very fit state.
Was it a relief to you or not?
I mean, it was really, because I was in a bit of a state.
Were you aware of any chance of you being sent to the Far East, or did that not occur?
A lot of them. Now, that's what happened. What they done with the air crew, as the war finished, they had all these air crew, and they didn't know what to do with them. They didn't want to fly the planes no more, so what they done, they sent them down to Blackpool, has learned to drive and they sent them all out the out to the Far East and the Middle East as drivers. There was warrant officers, flight sergeants, and they spent the rest of their till they got demobbed as drivers out in the Middle East and the Far East. Instead of saying, well, you've done enough, have a rest and finish with it. That's what they done with.
So what happened to you? You were sent to Newmarket then?
I was sent to Newmarket, and as a fabric worker. And while I was there, I was using Newmarket, the race course itself, as a place to smash the planes up.
That's it.
And I was smashing the planes up, hundreds of them every week. Spitfires, Stirlings, Lancasters, Halifaxes, Flying Fortresses, you name it.
And how were they destroying them?
Just cutting them all up. And there was a huge pile, about a mile and a half wide, long, about 50, 60 foot high. Some were brand new aircraft coming straight from the factories, and they were just cutting them up and piling them up. There's a huge dump there of brand new aircraft, all cut up, smashed up. And it was all sent back as scrap. Brand new aircraft.
Were your nerves improving?
Not really, no. And by then I was married. I got married after that raid on Hamburg. I come home.
Now tell us about getting married. When did you get married?
I got married on the 16th,
44. And what made you decide to get married then?
I've been with Kit since the beginning of the war. I knew her at the beginning of the war, and we'd always been together. We're inseparable, you know. Every time I come and leave, we was together, you know. And
but any reason particularly for getting married? Any wartime related reason for getting married then?
Not really. We just she said we get married, and that was it.
Now, and what state were you? We're talking now, we're going back when you were at Newmarket. How were you? Were you having any mental or physical problems?
I was having a lot of mental trouble.
Sort of mental problems were you? This is before you left the RAF.
Yeah, I was getting heavy sweats, and I just didn't feel right. Mind, I didn't know it then, but I was seriously ill. That was what the trouble was. I was really, really seriously ill.
And what was wrong with you?
Tuberculosis, TB.
And when did you find that out?
After the war, when I come out, when I was dismissed.
So, but you didn't find it out while you...
No, I should have done, but it didn't. There was no signs until I come out of the forces, and I started spitting up blood, and went to the doctors.
Hang on. So what happens? You're at Newmarket. What happens at Newmarket?
Well, I was just there as a fabric worker doing the... making the fabric sheets for the lorries and big bags, what they used to have, canvas bags, you know, for the trucks. And that's all we'd done. In fact, all we was doing all was wasting time.
And how long were you there for?
Nearly 12 months.
So, until you were demobbed from there?
Yeah, I was demobbed from there, yeah.